WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Sarah Jessica Parker, starred opposite Steve Martin in L.A. Story, Nicolas Cage in Honeymoon in Vegas, and Johnny Depp in Ed Wood. Now she's starring in the new comedy, Miami Rhapsody. She plays an advertising copywriter who's just accepted a marriage proposal, only to discover that everyone in her family is having a secret affair. And that's shaking her confidence in the very idea of marriage. In this scene, she's shopping for a wedding cake with her fiancé, played by Gil Bellows, but she's getting cold feet, so she tries to talk him into just living together.
We're not going to feel trapped. Being together is going to be like an opportunity, not an obligation.
Well, I don't want to live together. I want to get married.
Really? You don't see it as a dying institution?
No, I still think marriage works. My parents had a wonderful marriage.
Yeah, well, please, your parents were saints. They could probably cure leprosy, too.
Okay, you just got this idea in your head that marriage leads to misery.
Well, it's true. Married women get depressed more than single women.
Because they marry the wrong people.
Well, how can you be so positively sure that we're the right people? I mean, look at these two. Third time's a charm? Please, who's to say that that's not going to be us one day?
So fine. You just want to live together? Is that what you want? You want to skip the wedding?
No, we can get married. Go ahead, pick a cake. Anything you want, as long as it's chocolate.
Sarah Jessica Parker started her acting career as a child in theater, including a year-long stint on Broadway as Annie when she was 14. Her parents encouraged her artistic inclinations and were thrilled when, as a girl, she landed a part in a Harold Pinter production of The Innocents. The play starred Claire Bloom, who was living with Philip Roth. These were people her parents were enamored of. Sarah Jessica Parker remembers this as being an idyllic time.
Both Harold and especially Claire took sort of a personal interest in my well-being and took care of me. I mean, Claire would make me come to dinner with her because I was on the road away from my family. She'd make me come to dinner with her and only eat fresh vegetables, and she would check and see what I was reading all the time. And she would make sure whatever city that we went to on the road before we came into Broadway that I took ballet classes with the ballet company that was affiliated with the city. And she used to say to me all the time, you know, please don't become a professional child. I worry, you know, whatever happens, just don't become a professional child.
When she said a professional child, did she mean a professional child actor or someone who makes a profession out of being a kid?
The latter, yes. Oh. She was really worried about she was worried about cutesy, you know. She was worried about that polished showbiz sort of young Ethel Merman thing. The same thing my parents were. That was their biggest concern, was that I turn into like a commodity of some sort. And well, they knew the limitations of that, obviously.
Speaking of young Ethel Merman, hey, you were Annie on stage for 2 years. That's young Ethel Merman training school.
I know. I was the blemish. I was the, I don't know, to this day, I'm not certain how that all happened. I mean, I'm very grateful for the experience and I loved it, but I was, as my father said when we first saw that show, we got standing room and we went to see it right after it had opened on Broadway. And he said, oh, you know, Sarah Jessica, you're not Annie material. And I said, you know, why, beyond the vocal, you know, limitations that I had? And he said, you know, you just don't. You don't look it, you don't sound it, you know. The girls were built physically a certain way that I was just not, although I felt my physical presence was appropriate for the Depression era. I thought they all should be wayfish and, you know, look like they were eating off of rationed food stamps and things like that. But my father said no, because the girls were stronger than me. But it was one of those crazy flukes. You know, when you're a kid, nothing really matters, so you audition and you have no fear, and you end up, You accumulate a lot of things that you don't realize are difficult to get later in life.
What was the best and worst part of being Annie?
The best part was singing with a live orchestra every night, you know, like a 30-piece orchestra or something crazy like that. And the people that I met who I simply adored. And I think the worst part was trying to define myself when I left the show, being, you know, having a really hard time internally trying to figure out what I wanted and who I was, not what everybody else wanted me to be, meaning in the theater community. That was a really kind of awkward period for me.
What did people want you to be?
Well, I just think they wanted me to sing really loudly. You know, people wanted me to do Broadway musicals after I left the show. And I really, you know, the minute I left the show, within hours, my hair was dyed back to my own color. And I wanted to go to high school and, or at least be around, you know, regular children my age. And I wanted to be part of something where I was one of many and not alone. And I don't think that's what people in the theater community had in mind. I mean, legitimately, they wanted me to, you know, be a big singer. And, you know, I'd come from straight drama. You know, I'd come from Harold Pinter and Claire Bloom. And, you know, the television experiences that I had had in Cincinnati were all about, you know, high drama, crises. And I thought I was a serious actress. And I thought that was just a fluke that this had happened in Annie. And I was, you know, like I said, I was proud to be one of the Annies, but I was afraid it was going to retard the rest of my career in some way.
I think the first time I saw you perform was in Square Pegs, the TV series that was on in, what, 82, I think it was.
Yep, 82 or 83. Yeah, 82.
And you played a high school student, and, you know, you had a best friend who both thought of yourselves as being, you know, really out of it, not ready for the cool crowd. But,
right.
But you were probably the most interesting girls in the school, right?
Oh, I think we were.
Yeah. So I liked that series a lot. It didn't last on TV very long. But
no.
But it was good. Was that a good experience for you?
Yeah, it was a great experience. And I think... you know, I happen to have had really good experiences in television, and they've all been really short-lived. They've all...
Oh, Equal, you know, Justice?
Equal Justice, and a show right before that called A Year in the Life. But all of my television experiences have been critically very successful and creatively very satisfying. And Square Pegs was really, I think, great because it was my first real experience in Los Angeles, and it was so different. And my parents up to that point had been so wary of me doing a television series and had done everything that they could kind of to stop it. And this was a smart show, and it was sophisticated, and it was so unique. And that was my first experience really in Hollywood, you know. And I was working with such good people. And so for me, I think it in the end ultimately allowed me to continue to work in television because I assumed that all my experiences would be like that, and I wasn't turned off by it. I think the only down part of that was the impact for a long time that it had on my career in terms of people thinking of me as anything other than Patty Green, which was my name on the show. You know, I was for 10 years playing the cerebral best friend, you know, of the pretty girl.
Better that than Annie, right?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, provides a challenge, but once you do it a few times, you want to sort of experience new and different roles.
My guest is actress Sarah Jessica Parker. She stars in the new comedy Miami Rhapsody. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress Sarah Jessica Parker. What was the first role where you felt like you were not only playing an adult, but you were playing a three-dimensional and sexual adult?
Although some might disagree with me, I would have to say L.A. Story in terms of film. Even though she was, you know, just for lack of a better word, she was a bimbo. She was Steve Martin's bimbo and was a lot more complicated. And I think she obviously was someone who operated, you know, from her own, like from the point of view of her sexuality, and she was an adult, and that was the first time I'd ever really been given an opportunity to play that.
Did Steve Martin cast you in the role?
I think ultimately, you know, he had say along with the director, but he was also serving in a producer capacity. So I think he did ultimately. I had to read with him a couple times and screen test with him, and I don't think if he'd been uncomfortable, he would have given the okay. So I credit him, and you know, in the end, with casting me.
Now, how much older is he than you?
Oh gosh, well, I'm 29, so he's maybe just in his 50s.
So he's about 20 years older.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, one of the things that women in Hollywood complain about all the time is that older men get roles and older women don't, mature women don't. So you always have younger women playing opposite older men. Was there anything that was uncomfortable about that for you?
Not a thing. politically, even it wasn't, because that was exactly her part in the movie. Her, Victoria Tennant would say in the film, you're so obvious, you're so common, you're choosing to spend time with somebody who doesn't threaten you or doesn't challenge you, it's so easy, you just run off with some sort of, little chippy. So it wasn't hard to play it, and obviously he wasn't hard to play opposite at all. Quite the contrary. He was just, he was dreamy, but I do know what you're talking about. There is a huge discrepancy. If a more mature woman were to play opposite a younger man, it would be a huge issue. It would be a cover story on every entertainment magazine, big risks taken in Hollywood.
You're right. Well, that reminds me of a bit of a sidebar here. Your stepfather, I believe, is about 8 years younger than your mother.
Yeah. And I think he may be even 9 years younger than my mother.
That's becoming much more accepted now than it probably was when they were married. Did that ever make you uncomfortable around friends? Did they ever think it was odd? And were you ever asked to, defend it?
You know what? It never once came up. My mother, maybe it's because my mother always, she looks very young. She always has, and she's very small. And maybe that's why, but it's interesting. It's just, you're the first person that's mentioned. It's never come up. But, my family was kind of strange anyway, so I guess they just assumed, if anyone thought about it, that it was just all part of the weird package.
What else was strange about your family?
Oh, we were real messy, and we didn't have any matching linens or furniture, and we were very, we were very poor, and our house was really an eyesore to the neighborhood. In fact, the sheriff would come over on more than one occasion and tell us to clean up our yard. We somehow always managed to move into these very wealthy, beautiful old neighborhoods with lots of fancy people, good people often, but fancy, because the schools were good. So my parents would manage to get a house in these nice neighborhoods, and we were always, we were unsightly, we were unseemly, we were an eyesore. My parents screamed and yelled at each other, and the neighbors could hear. And
did anybody ever call the police?
Oh, they may have. I wouldn't be surprised. But, this, I'm not talking too much out of school here. This is it's now kind of one of the funny stories you tell at Christmas.
Did you have the lawn? You know how every neighborhood has a family that has a lawn with like old tires on it, and old like wrought iron things that nobody knows what they are. And
well, worse,
metal things.
Well, we had no grass, and we had a tire swing.
Right.
But guess where everybody congregated?
On the tire swing.
No. Our yard,
the whole neighborhood.
Of course, because we were the fun house. We were allowed to sit on the furniture. We were allowed to roller skate. In fact, we were encouraged to roller skate in our house, because if you opened all the doors, it went in a full circle like a donut. So we were allowed to roller skate inside and ride our bikes inside. And kids would come in and out of our house. And my mom would actually make cookies and bring them out. And people hung out in our front yard because it was the fun, relaxed house. Our parents were politically very relaxed, and they were groovesters, and that's exactly what our house looked like. And our vegetables came from a co-op or whatever, I don't know, whatever that is. They were,
So they were messy, but they were bohemians.
They were messy bohemians, but it was strange because there was also the strange dichotomy. My mother was incredibly strict and puritanical in a lot of the other ways that she raised us. It was very, very complicated and hard to understand as a child.
Strict about what?
Oh, well, you know, all the boys had to wear like navy blue wool Eton suits with Peter Pan collars, and they wore like lederhosen in the dead of winter and little shorts. And the girls wore always hand smock dresses and plaids, tartans, and saddle oxfords and little tiny white socks. And we always had our hair in perfect big Russian bows, you know. And we looked, when we'd go to the opera every night and the ballet and the symphony and stuff, and we sort of like, my mother raised us, actually, timely as it is, she raised us exactly how Rose Kennedy raised her children. That's exactly what she modeled herself after.
Well, I could see how you would definitely get mixed messages between roller skating around the house and having the bows in your hair.
Exactly, with like, you know, roaches in your house and, you know, strange vermin. And yet you'd walk outside and we would really look like old money rich kids, like good old fashioned, you know, Roman Catholic. And we were, first of all, some of us are Jews. Some of us are, we don't know what we are. Some of us were baptized. And it was crazy.
Where's the rest of your family now in terms of show business?
Well, I have a brother named Timothy Britton, who's an incredible actor. He's in New York, and he does a lot of theater. He's actually one of the founding members of a company called Naked Angels. And I have actually a little sister who was in the whole run of Evita on Broadway, and she is now a second camera assistant. She pulls focus. And I have my eldest brother, Pippin, is a playwright and a screenwriter, and is writes for a children's television show. And then my sister Rachel is not in the theater anymore at all. She is a physician's assistant she does heart surgery. And then I have a little brother, Andrew, who just graduated from college with a degree in theater. I don't understand what the degree is myself, but he's been the stage manager in New York and is pursuing acting. And let's see, my little sister Allegra, who was with the Metropolitan Opera for 7 or 8 seasons, and then I have a little brother Aaron, who is 16 and who's just joined the ambulance corps.
Interesting family.
I hope I've not forgotten somebody. I don't think I have. I'll feel terrible.
Sarah Jessica Parker, she stars in the new film Miami Rhapsody. This is Fresh Air.